I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals. 2 hours of stories and information about hunting, fishing, and high adventure. It's KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Well, good morning and welcome to a brand new day. It is nice to have you with us as we head into hour number two and the final one for the program each and every week here on KSL News Radio. My thanks to Russ Smith from Sky Call for being here with us this morning, and also Navinopsis, who is sneaking away for the weekend. And will have more to tell us about his road trip as he heads back to Steamboat for a weekend with his lovely wife. I want to jump right into our conversation, though, to start this hour, and that is with Darren DeBlois, who is the Division of Wildlife Resources Game Mammals Program Coordinator. Thanks for your time, first of all, Darren, for joining us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
We wanted to get you on the heels of a Wildlife Board meeting that took place, I think, Thursday of this week, talking specifically, I mean, I'm sure there were other things, but talking specifically about final permit numbers for cougars and bobcat hunts in 2019-2020. This is one of those species, I think, that people sort of have a love-hate thing with. They fear them in the wild, and they can be a bit of a nuisance sometimes. But on the other hand, it has turned out to be, with at least in the terms of the cougars in a booming population, it has turned out to be a hunt that a lot of people look forward to.
Yeah, there's definitely many sides to and many points of view that come into play on especially cougar management, but bobcats as well. And you know, a lot of people can relate to these animals. They're very much in behavior like you know, house cats that a lot of people are familiar with, and I think that's part of why people from that really enjoy and advocate for cougars kind of come from that angle. And then we've got livestock producers that when cougars start eating their livestock can be a real problem. So it's quite a balancing act. You've got to listen to all sides and then try to strike some kind of balance in the middle.
Yeah, and we'll sort out the details of how you're doing that with the new 3-year plan that was talked about at the Wildlife Board and approved. I do want to share, I live in West Jordan, so I'm at about 83rd South and 52nd West out around Copper Hills High School out there. Several years ago, we had a cougar get into our neighborhood, one of the subdivisions, and I remember Chopper 5 hanging overhead while they were trying to find that guy, and he ended up in somebody's window well. It's surprising. Yeah. It's surprising sometimes where they show up.
Yeah, there's always sort of this transient population that, you know, cougars, when they get to be about 2 years of age, especially males, usually have to kind of vacate the area where they were born. There's usually a bigger, older male there that doesn't want them around. And so you'll see them move, and they sometimes do end up in neighborhoods, and that can be kind of scary for people, and it's certainly something that we're concerned about. We want to make sure they move on their way and don't hang out there, because they can sometimes kill pets and certainly pose some danger, I'm sure, to younger kids and things like that. So yeah, we want to make sure they're not hanging out in town.
My wife and I are both mountain bikers, too, and we're constantly reminded that they're probably around us while we're out there riding, and we just don't know about it. That's true for a lot of hikers, I would imagine, in the foothills around Salt Lake City, even.
Yeah, that really is true, and maybe that's helpful. I hope it doesn't make people too nervous, but, you know, people need to know that when they're out there recreating the backcountry, they're in and among mountain lion habitat, and again, those lions typically see or hear us coming, and they go the other way. So you've been around them, you probably haven't seen them, and that's good. We'd like to keep it that way.
Yeah. You talk about what a balance it is, certainly for your management plans to deal with this, considering human and livestock safety, as well as the health of other wildlife species that cougars may prey on. But it's more than just the numbers, isn't it? Because your determination for the number of permits really comes down to making sure how many older age animals are out there breeding females and even healthy cougars in the population.
Right. Yeah. Our overall goal for the state is to maintain a healthy cougar population in the state. And in practice, that may mean in some areas we're trying to suppress populations of lions, depending on what our management objectives are. For example, you mentioned prey species. If we've got concerns about a bighorn sheep herd, for example, one or two mountain lions that key in on a bighorn herd could really do a lot of damage and actually really set us back in terms of bighorn management. So that's important. But then in other parts of the state where we don't have the issues, then, you know, we could look at seeing some increases. Overall, we over the last decade, we've seen a growing lion population, and all indications are that the lion population in the state's doing really well.
Yeah, so because of that, you're adding an additional 46 to permits to last year's hunt.
Right, yeah, that's where we wound up after the meeting and having discussions about all the individual units in the state. So, yeah, a little bit of an increase. It's a little bit less than last year, but we still got probably as high of a lion population as we've had for the last 20 years right now.
So it brings the permit total to 690. The important thing for people to think about, and, you know, there's panic. Well, they're going to, you know, allow 690 cougars to be taken from the population. This is a tough hunt. Not everybody bags one, right?
Right. It's incredibly difficult. And, you know, success rates, depending on the methods, but you know, in general, they run about 60% statewide. And you know, we've been doing a cougar study with USU and the National Wildlife Research Center. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but it is, you've almost got to be a marathon runner on some of these things. You got to keep up with dogs, and it's in the winter and you're going through snow and you're crossing canyons, and it's a tough, tough proposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy.
There's also something new with the weapons rule amendment. Explain that one.
Yeah, we recommended some changes to some of their weapon requirements with our big game hunts, and so what we've done is just made sure that the cougar legal weapons to take a cougar aligns with that. But the there were some changes to archery equipment rules. They lessened the poundage on the draw, and they changed some arrow weight stuff. Probably the biggest change is the air bow. Allowing for an air bow, which is a pneumatic rifle that shoots an arrow. So you load an arrow into the barrel. And that was something it was just mainly housekeeping, just making sure that we're consistent with what a legal weapon is to use if you're hunting. So
and
that was the reason we did that.
Yeah, we refer to that sometimes as handgun archery, right?
Yeah. There's a little bit of confusion. I think there's going to be some specific hunts that big game hunters might have an opportunity for, and that's that handgun, archery, shotgun regulation. This was more just to align with the legal weapon requirements.
So ah, I got you.
It just means that if it's legal to take a deer, it's legal to take a mountain lion with.
Okay. All right, let's shift gears then to bobcats. Their population not growing as quickly. It might even be declining a little bit in the state.
That seems to be the case. Bobcats have this classic cyclical population trend that goes through time, and so they typically will follow their prey base by a year or two, and so they just cycle. So as bobcat prey dwindles due to natural factors, you know, rabbits. If people are familiar with hunting rabbits, those populations just go up and down and up and down, and they just kind of cycle through time. And bobcat populations follow those same cycles. And so our plan is to be sensitive to that and make sure that, you know, as we see those downtrends in the population, that we're not over-harvesting and causing those to be more steep. And so We are recommending some restrictions this year, one less permit per individual. We're capping the permits at just over 6,000. And we're going to start season a week later. And again, typically bobcat harvest, people that are out trapping or taking bobcats don't drive that cycle, but we do need to be sensitive to it. So that's why we're recommending that this time around.
All right, so the hunting season for bobcat, 1 week shorter, will run from November 20th to March 1st of 2020. Also approving the permits, and you mentioned this just briefly there. I guess I was not aware that a person can buy five permits, or last year it was six, I guess. This year they can still buy five, but it is less.
Yeah, that's the case. So five per individual next year. And last year we didn't have any kind of cap on the permits. And so, each individual could have six, but we would sell as many as people wanted. And so this year, this coming year, there'll be an overall cap as well. So once they're gone, they're gone.
So with both the Cougars and the Bobcats, though, you finished up with a three-year plan that I guess you feel pretty good about.
Yeah. These populations are, it's tough, well, impossible really to count them just by their biological nature. And so, it really biologically makes sense to take things in three-year chunks and then look at the data and make decisions that way. Sometimes we get these weird years and things look a little different, and it's tempting to make a quick decision and try to really adjust things drastically, and that's really not necessary for these populations there. Cougars have a lot of kittens when they have kittens, and they their populations are pretty resilient.
All right. Darren, we appreciate your time today. Just wanted to make sure that we were first to get it out here with the details of the Wildlife Board meeting from earlier this week. Darren DuBois is with us from the Division of Wildlife Resources, the Mammals Program Coordinator. Thanks again for your time.
Sure thing.
All right, stay with us. We'll have more of KSL Outdoors Radio when we come back.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors. Brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals. 2 hours of stories and information about hunting, fishing, and high adventure. It's KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I'm excited for the next couple of minutes to be able to talk about ski season. I guess I'm not the only one that's jonesing for a return to winter here. And as we have said on the program, Navidauskas, so many times, now is the time to be thinking about getting yourself set up for the winter season, no matter where you love to ski. But today, we're going to focus our attention on Snow Basin Resort, and their general manager, Davey Ratchford, is with us. Davey, how are you?
Tim, it's great to hear from you.
Nice to connect with you. And I know when I've got somebody from a ski resort on the line that I'm not the only one thinking about winter. That's probably on your mind, too.
Oh, it's wild. We're less than 100 days out. Everything's ramping up from snowmaking systems being tested, and you're looking at weather reports and selling season passes. We are less than 100 days out until we open for the season.
And I'm right that this is the best time of year to get the best prices on your daily ticket, right? If you're going to do it on a season basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Season passes in the ski industry right now are really the way to go, and ours has been selling really well. Lots of people that are attending Snow Basin this winter, but prices go up right before Labor Day. And yeah. So that's pretty standard in the ski industry, and we'd encourage everybody, save yourself a little bit of money, buy early, lock in, get ready for the season. And so, the Snow Basin season pass is exceptional. We're excited about it this year, and we've got some new things that we're doing, which we're really excited about.
Before we jump into this year, I want to just flash back a little bit, because you had a fantastic, really a great 2018-19 season with some renovations that started right there at the base of the mountain at Earl's Lodge.
Yeah, we've been, it's been an incredible 18 months from the renovations that we did, the enhancing of some of the trail widening systems that we did up on the mountain, snowmaking, Earl's Lodge, and Earl's Lodge is currently going through another makeover. It was pretty incredible. Plus, you can't go too long without saying the snow last year was just incredible, and it came at the right times, 430 inches. It actually caused us problems in the spring. There was so much snow, and we usually get to work on some of our plans, but we had to delay those because there was still a lot of snow on the mountain. But it was an exceptional year, and we're excited because every time you have a good year, it seems like the following year that there's still this amped up kind of excitement, and we're seeing that, and it's definitely flowing into what we're seeing, the excitement coming into the 1920 season.
Yeah, and the changes up at John Paul Lift, I know, were really well received with the widening of the Mount Ogden Bull Road up there.
Yeah, that was huge. And this year, we're putting in snowmaking on that road. So what that allows us to do is open up a major area of the mountain, the JP area, sooner than we've been able to do before because we can put snowmaking up in there. And so these improvements really just enhance the guest experience as much as we can. And that one in particular is exciting because that area of the mountain is really attractive to a lot of our guests.
Yeah, you guys put an emphasis too, and I like this, on families being able to get up there and ski of all ages and all abilities. And for that reason, you've made some improvements to grow the family zone in Bear Hollow.
Yeah, that's right. Bear Hollow was one of those natural funnel areas on our mountain where all sorts of different types of skier ability can go into one place. So you have expert skiers along with brand new beginners. And we're devising ways that we can move people into different areas and create family zones and tree skiing where there's these great little isolated areas where families can go in with their kids and have a great time and then ski out at the bottom of Bear Hollow. So we've been doing baffling systems for safety. We've been doing trail expansions on either side. And it is, the whole idea of it is to try create more of a family zone. And there's more of that coming throughout the resort. We have some other plans that we're doing too down at the bottom or the top of Little Cap, our family zone area, and we're expanding that and the stuff around Bear Hollow. So, yeah, it's really exciting to see because we do have a lot of families. And the Learn and Earn program, the award-winning program that we had around the country, that continues. It's still growing. We're able to bring over 1,000 never-evers, people that have never skied in their life, and put them through a lesson and a program and get them some equipment. And we're really excited to see those people continue in the second year of the program for them. And it's just been extraordinary. And we love the fact that new people are coming into the industry.
Speaking of moving people, you're finding ways to get them on the mountain a little bit better, a little easier, I guess, for everybody with some expanded parking help, too.
Yeah, so that's one of the big things at Snow Basin. It's an incredibly, it's an incredible mountain. It's large. There's a lot of skiing. And we have a lot of parking. We have over 2,300 parking spots, but we could use more. And so we've been devising plans to be able to create 10 to 12% growth in our parking capacity. And there's several things that takes into account. But we're excited about this year expanding that and giving a better guest experience for those people that are coming up, especially on those powder days. Because as chance would have it, there's a powder day on a Saturday, and everyone's coming up to enjoy it. And so we always have to find ways to improve that experience.
Yeah, I'll tell you the other thing I loved last year was the NASTAR event that you had up there, where just about anybody, if you're brave enough to give it a try, can get up there with grassroots ski racing. And NASTAR's coming back.
It is, yeah. NASTAR is one of those nationally recognized programs that allows people of, again, different ability to challenge themselves and test themselves and improve their skiing. And so we're excited to partner with them and have the program up and running at Snow Basin. And that's going to be, that's going to be really exciting for people. I'm excited to try it again and, test my speed.
And really, you're racing against yourself. If you're like me, you're just trying to better your time or take out fewer gates or something.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. There is a pass, I guess, for NASTAR that people should be thinking about because they're going to go on sale soon.
Yeah, they are. And we always encourage everybody. The website, snowbasin.com, is really where, everything from NASTAR to our season pass sales, any of the announcements, any of the facts and figures about the mountain, that's where you can go. It's probably the best place to do your research and see what's in store for this year. All of our capital improvements are listed in there, so you can see and get excited for the changes that we're making for this upcoming year. All our events, like the new Snow Bison that's coming at the end of September, that's in there, and so you can learn about what we're doing. But it's a pretty exciting time at Snow Basin 100 days out and lots to do still.
Yeah. We've only got a minute left here, but I want to make sure we do talk about passes. I know people, and my wife, cut her teeth on that mountain at Snow Basin growing up in Ogden. And if she could, she'd ski there every weekend. There are people that just want a season pass to Snow Basin, but there are also some options with the Epic Pass that may be new to people.
Yeah, that's right. So the Epic Pass is the pass when you ski Park City Mountain. If you're a destination guest from around the world and you come to Utah on an Epic Pass, you can ski Park City Mountain. Well, we partnered with them so that if you're on an Epic Pass, you can ski Snow Basin. You can try Snow Basin. And that's something we're really excited about, to see those guests come and experience us. They may never have made it this way, and seeing how exceptional our mountain is and the type of skiing that we have. So we're excited to see that guest this year and welcome them and have them use their pass. It's a pretty seamless experience. They can come in and they can scan right at the list and be able to go up and enjoy Snow Basin and learn a new mountain on their pass here in Utah.
Great stuff. All right, Davey, thanks for your time. We are out of time here, but 100 days out. And again, if they want details on all these things, they just need to go to the website.
That's right. Yeah, Tim, thank you. It's great talking to you, and we're excited for the upcoming season.
All right, buddy. It's snowbasin.com. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got a news update coming, and then more of KSL Outdoors as we head into the final half hour just ahead.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.